If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Welcome, gather round the fireside and listen to a tale of Fionn Mac Cool, Cú Chulainn, Deirdre of the Sorrows, Gráin Ó Maolaodh. From giants right down to fairies, of both the drooping and solitary, and close to are sometimes scary. Anything goes by the fireside. Yeah. Fireside, the Pooka fireside, the Merrow fireside. Kings and queens fighting heroes, don't you run from the fun, there's no need to hide. Sit by the fireside. Fireside.
Hello and welcome to Fireside, the Irish storytelling podcast. Each episode of Fireside, we take a story from folklore or mythology, we retell it, have a chat about the tale itself and about the craft, the culture and the history of storytelling. My name is Kevin C. Olihan. I am your host and your Fireside Bard. Welcome to episode 214 of Fireside. Today on the Irish Storytelling Podcast, it is Queen Maeve of Connacht versus the forces of Mayo. This is the tale of Phyllis and the Mayo Tawn. But before we get down to that, a very big warm welcome to all of you, any new or returning listeners. If you're a new listener, this is actually a really nice sample episode. This is very traditional Fireside stock, what we're doing here. If you enjoy this, why not head right back through the ranks and the years, all the way back to episode one and see what we've been building up to over the journey of Fireside thus far. And if you're a returning listener, as always, thank you so much for your continued support. All of the usual ways you can support the podcast: you can follow me over on Instagram at Fireside Bard. That's the best place to message me or get in touch with any queries, questions, or just to say hello. If you're not on social media, you can contact me at thefiresidebard@gmail.com. I love hearing from each and every one of you, whatever the platform is. If you want to support me directly, you can buy my book, Garden Sea, A Neomyth of Home, my poetry collection, which is available in paperback from the Headstuff website or in Kindle version from Amazon. All of the links are in the description below. And of course, you can support the podcast directly by subscribing to Headstuff Plus at headstuffpodcast.com, where for as little as €5 a month, although you can pay more if you want, you can gain access to bonus material, not just for Fireside, but for all of the podcasts on the Headstuff Podcast Network, the ever-growing Headstuff Podcast Network. Those are the hard sells out of the way. Bit of housekeeping before we kick off. There has been, as I've talked a little bit, there has been a bit of disarray with Fireside over the past couple of months, from me being away in America and to some personal struggles that I've been having over the last few months. And there actually was, because these things come in threes, we actually have had a changeover at Headstuff in our podcast platform. We have, since I started Fireside, used as hosting software called Audioboom, where we upload the podcast and then it is automatically uploaded to all the other channels like Spotify and Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. But we have now swapped to a site called Megaphone. And in the changeover of that in the last month, there has been a bit of toing and froing, and I was still uploading things to Audioboom after Audioboom had stopped hosting the podcast. So there was a couple of episodes that didn't come out when they should have. So last week or the week before, two episodes would have come out in the same day that were meant to be from the previous 2 weeks. So I do apologize for all the chopping and changing. As we settle more into the summer, we should get right back to the regular rhythm of every Wednesday, every week for Fireside coming out, because that is the structure I've built and that is the discipline I like. And I know that a lot of people listen to like the regular rhythm of it. So that is just what has been going on, rest assured. The podcast is in no danger of slowing down. I have been gigging an awful lot in and around Dublin, mostly playing Irish music around town and also giving literary tours. And it's been great since I got back from America. It's been fairly full on and consistent, and it's great to go back in there. because I haven't really spent any proper time in Dublin or around Ireland for any length of period since really before COVID, because I've fortunately been able to travel for work around the world so much. So it's lovely to be back and while I'm here to be working away. But it is tricky to formulate the plan when you're working entirely at night and then trying to write during the day, whether it be the podcast or the book I'm finishing off. So there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and just trying to carve back out the regular rhythm and routine. I'm actually recording this episode from London. I'm over visiting two of my friends over here and just taking a few days to reconnect with them, but also to reset my rhythm and kind of head back to Ireland next week for the summer with my game face on, and Fireside will be a very core part of that. But the story for this week is, so these Ravescala that we've been doing over the past few months, these pre-tales from the cattle raid of Cooley of the Ulster cycle, this was the story that made me want to do that in the first place. This seems to be certainly probably one of the strongest and one of the most well-known of these lesser-known pre-tales to the Táin. And this is known either as Táin Bó Phillis, or it is just colloquially known as the Mayo Táin. And this was one I was going to save for later, but there actually have been some of these Ravescala that I haven't even been able to find any source for. The internet has been very lucky, because a lot of these stories can't even be found in books, or certainly not books that are still in print, because I do, where always possible, like to get the physical texts. But I found some very good links online, which I've been leaving in the show notes of every episode. But now came the time for the Mayo Táin. And we should, hopefully, I should be able to find a couple more in the subsequent weeks, because I'm really enjoying spending more time in the Ulster cycle. And this one's no exception. This is a particularly special one because we have the benefits of these tales, where we get to meet some of the old characters that we know from, whether you've been listening to this podcast since the beginning or whether you just know this world of the Ulster cycle. The characters such as Queen Maeve and Fergus MacRoch and Alil MacMata, but also get to meet these new characters who exist in this kind of Rogue One era of Ulster mythology. These characters that exist very much in their own world, but maybe don't play a part in the grander epic of An Táin. And so without further ado, I will get down to the story and we will chat more about it afterwards, of course. But this is Phillis and the Mayo Táin on Fireside. Phillis and the Mayo Táin. There once was a minor tribe of Éire known as the Gawanra, who lived and ruled in the west of the island, in what we would now call County Mayo. The Gawanra were an ancient people, descended from the Fearbulk, the bagmen who had ruled Éire before the arrival of the gods of the Tua de Danann. This made the proud Gawanra an older tribe than most. The majority of ruling Tuas were descended from the Gaels, the mortal men who had overthrown the Tua de Danann. The Gawanra were, at the time of this tale, ruled by Alil the Fair, Alil Fionn, and his wife, Phillis. Phillis was a powerful and beautiful woman, and despite her love and loyalty to her husband, Phillis was said to possess a voracious sexual appetite. The main source of the power of Phillis and Alil Fionn was said to be the mighty Mwael, an enormous cow that could feed 300 people in a single milking. Cattle were wealth. Cattle were power. But the man that Phillis lusted after was Fergus MacRoch, the exiled king of Ulster, who had recently taken refuge in Cruachan Fort in Connacht with the equally lustful Queen Maeve and her consort, Alil MacMata. And the lust of Phillis for Fergus would lead to bloody massacre. Fergus was heroic and noble, which made him desirable to nearly all who heard of him, never mind those who could see him with their own two eyes. And when Queen Maeve first welcomed Fergus into her home, it was not long before she welcomed him into her bed. Maeve's husband, Alil, naturally became jealous of this knightly affair. Alil may have been king of Connacht, but he was not king of Queen Maeve. The only thing Alil could do to thwart Fergus was to symbolically take away his manhood. Fergus MacRoke's greatest source of power was an enchanted sword he would unfurl to put a definitive end to any conflict. While Fergus and Maeve ravaged each other in bed, Alil crept into Fergus's quarters and stole the Ulsterman's magic blade and replaced it with a wooden sword. But it was a poet who would truly instigate the bloodshed. Brychna was the olive of the west of Ireland, the highest of the poetic classes of the Fila. This gave him tremendous influence and power over those he encountered. Because Gaelic society held by a thread, everything was word of mouth. What did everyone else think of you? So, if a respected poet satirized you, no one else would fear you. And Brychna enjoyed wielding this power. It didn't sit right with the poet that Fergus MacRoke had abandoned Ulster. He called the exiled king a coward, a turncoat, and a blood traitor, and said as much to the former king's face. But Fergus had not taken his decision lightly. After abdicating his throne to Concobar Mac Nasa, Fergus had served the new king loyally, until Concobar's murder of the sons of Uisnech for the kidnapping of the king's future wife, Deirdre, later to be immortalized as Deirdre of the Sorrows. When he realized words would not hurt the exiled king, the poet Brychna decided to take action against Fergus MacRoke. The poet went to Mayo, to Rathmorgan, the ruling fort of Ulil Fionn and Flithis. He knew that Flithis harbored a lust for Fergus, so Brychna told Flithis of all of Fergus's heroic deeds, of his prowess in battle, of his handsome appearance. This drove Flithis wild with desire. Brychna did tell Flithis of her own husband Ulil Fionn's equal nobility, but Flithis could not be reasoned with. She asked the poet to bring word to Fergus of her desires. So Brychna returned to Crohan Fort and told Fergus MacRoke of the desires of Flithis. He also told Queen Maeve of the magnitude of Rathmorgan. "Truly I have never seen a larger or more magnificent structure than Rathmorgan, or a more beautiful woman than Flithis." Fergus MacRoke decided that Flithis would be the perfect match to his own sexual appetites, and vowed to liberate her from her husband. Queen Maeve became jealous of her new lover running off into the arms of another. Maeve's husband Alil was glad Fergus was leaving, and smiled to himself, knowing that his rival was marching off to war without his enchanted sword. And Alil MacMatha was right to smile. Fergus and his army marched on Rathmorgan and at the gates called to King Ulil Fionn, "I have come for your wife." And war began. 1,000 soldiers from each side fell that day, and Ulil Fionn marched out to personally fight Fergus in single combat. Fergus was the superior warrior, but when he went to remove his enchanted sword to deal the final blow, Fergus discovered to his horror that the sword had been replaced with one made of wood, which was obliterated by Ulil Fionn, and the exiled King Fergus MacRoke was defeated and taken prisoner of Mayo. When Queen Maeve heard of Fergus's capture, she mustered her own armies. "I will not have a man in my protection, a proud hero and incredible lover in the fort and clutches of Mayo." Alil MacMata knew there was no arguing with his wife. He was not keen for Fergus to return to Croan, but this was a matter of honour. Connacht could not appear weaker than the Gowanra. In glorious armour and spirit, Queen Maeve personally led her armies to Mayo, and the siege of Rathmorgan began. Both sides suffered heavy losses, and Maeve watched in anguish as 4 foster sons and 1 daughter fell by Mayo swords. Maeve changed tactics. She held a meeting with the leaders of Ollil Fionn's armies and told them that if they defected and fought for her, Maeve would give them control of the Gowanra and the protection of Croan. Queen Maeve was intimidating, commanding, and convincing, and so every leader to a man abandoned Ollil Fionn and changed sides that very day. But despite the heavy losses, the remaining loyal forces of Ollil Fionn could not be defeated. They knew Rathmorgan, they knew these lands, and they were defending their home. They fought with the greater purpose and held out. But inside Rathmorgan Fort, things were about to change. As Ollil Fionn went out to fight for his wife, his honour and his lands, Flidus went to visit Fergus MacRoke. Fergus had been displayed from the fort to mock and goad Queen Maeve, but Flidus still hungered for Fergus and released him. Then the two prospective lovers made their plan. When Ollil Fionn returned from battle that night, his wife Flidus filled him with drink until the king passed out unconscious. Flidus then sent word to Queen Maeve of the weakest parts of Rathmorgan and where to attack. The armies of Connacht broke through the fort walls and freed the imprisoned Fergus. The next morning, a hungover and weakened Ollil Fionn rose to battle, and the now crazed and angry Fergus MacRoke fought the king and, after hacking and slashing his body, cut the head from Ollil Fionn's neck. With their king dead, the Gowanra were defeated, and Rathmorgan was razed to the ground by the armies of Queen Maeve in vengeance of the loss of her 4 foster sons and daughter. Fergus impaled Ollil Fionn's head on a spike and presented it to Flidus. But when the Queen of the Gowanra looked into the unblinking dead eyes of her husband, the consequences of her actions flooded her brain. "What have I done?" she asked the silent king. Flidus demanded Fergus bring her the body of Ollil Fionn, and when she saw the cut and mangled body, her remorse and devastation intensified. Fergus could see the regret in Flidus's eyes, but he had not come this far and suffered the loss of so many warriors to go home empty-handed. He was a king of Ulster, an exiled king, but still a king. He could not afford to be taken hostage by some petty tribe. "You're coming home with me," he told Flidus, "and we're taking your cow, too." Fergus came upon the mighty Mwael cow, but having lost its master, the cow would not budge. Fergus tried calling, pushing, and even lashing the cow into submission, but the Mwael could not be moved. It was only Brichna, the poet who had emerged from the woodwork when the fighting was done, that coaxed the Mwael into moving. For the promise of an exceptional fee for the poet, of course. With Flidus and the Mwael in tow, Fergus and the armies of Queen Maeve left Rathmorgan in ruins and set off for Croan Fort. But all chieftains have families. The late Ollil Fionn's father, Donal Dul Buíoch, Donal of the Yellow Locks, was still alive and still a very powerful man. When he learned of his son's massacre, Donal vowed revenge. He intercepted Maeve and Fergus on their route home, but Donal Dul Buíoch would not just use men. He would use another kind of warfare, Donal had a ferocious pack of wolfhounds. The Irish wolfhound has always been a legendary creature in Erra. A far cry from the still massive wolfhounds we know today, the Irish wolfhounds of the Celtic times were said to be the size of lions, enormous and terrifying. And Donal's pack of loyal hounds began to tear the armies of Queen Maeve limb from limb. In the chaos, Fergus MacRoke found Donal and engaged him in single combat. Alil MacMata had returned Fergus's enchanted sword, and Donal Dhul Buíochá fell by the hand of Fergus MacRoke. But Donal had a grandson, Alil Fionn's son, Muiredach the Stutterer, who had arrived to aid his grandfather. While the wolfhounds continued to devour the Connacht men, Muiredach liberated the Mael and Flidus and returned them to Mayo, to home, and to victory. Flidus never married again and spent her life in the rebuilding and protection of her own tribe, the resilient Gawanra. Queen Maeve and Fergus MacRoke had to concede defeat. They returned to Croaghan Fort, back into the arms of each other, much to the chagrin of Alil MacMata. This was the Tawnbo Flidus, the raid for the cattle of Flidus. It was bloody and it was terrible. But this is not a tragedy. And in this fireside bard's opinion, they all deserved each other. To be continued.
Hello, my name is Dave Coffey and I am the host of Phoning It In, the hilarious improvised phone-in show. It's like Joe Duffy's Liveline, except we make it all up on the spot. That's right, I get a bunch of comedians into the studio and they have no idea what they're going to be talking about until I introduce them on the air. We have just recorded a 100th episode special featuring 15 of the best comedy performers in the country. Go and check that out, binge the other 99 and become a lifelong fan of Phoning It In with me, Dave Coffey, right here on the Headstuff Podcast Network.
And that is the tale of Flidus and the male Tawn on Tawnbo Flidus on Fireside, and I hope you all enjoyed it. This is, I will get this straight off the back, this is a really horny story. The characters in this story have very, very, as I say, voracious sexual appetites. That is a very strong part of any translation, no matter how old, that you find of this story. Now, Irish mythology is quite horny in general, particularly the Ulster Cycle. Anything that involves Queen Maeve or Cú Chulainn, there's just a lot of blood and a lot of sex. But there's something about this one particularly that's almost like ancient Greek. This is, it's said that on Tombo Cúna, the cattle raid of Cooley is like the Irish Iliad. You know, it is our great epic. But this seems far more like the Trojan War, a much more microcosmic Trojan War, but almost in reverse, where rather than, if Flidus is the Helen of Troy, rather than being taken away by Paris, she lures or asks for the company of Fergus MacRoke to the castle, which Fergus is only too happy to accept, leaving his recently very jaded lover Queen Maeve to come and rescue him when he is kidnapped. But everyone, and even the imagery of Alil MacMata powerless to stop his wife Queen Maeve from sleeping with Fergus MacRoke on a daily basis, the only thing he can do is to like symbolically take away Fergus's manhood, which is to steal his enchanted sword, even the enchanted sword. So the lust and the hunger in this story is worn very much on its sleeve, and it's like everyone is just thinking with their loins first. And you see this particularly illustrated within Flidus herself, who is the central character of and title character of this story, the character we meet in this and don't meet really again in any other tale. I've certainly never come across her in a way that has stuck out. We have her with her voracious sexual appetites and her desire for the handsome and heroic Fergus MacRoke. But when he comes and they hatch this plan together to murder her husband, she drugs her husband by plying him with drink and then sends him out hungover and weakened the next day to be decapitated by Fergus. But when Fergus, admittedly with a bit of overkill, impales the dead king's head on a spike and presents it to Flitus, Flitus regrets it all. It's like she has this sobering moment where she realized that she had just been thinking just with her lust, and suddenly the conscience comes back in and she remembers that actually her husband wasn't such a bad dude and didn't possibly deserve to die in this horrendous fashion. And she is still then kidnapped by Fergus, who is still just thinking with his dick, and taking her away and the cow. Of course, there has to be a cow in a cattle raid story. And I saw an interesting, as a side note, I saw an interesting note on this tale in that for a very superficial or supernatural cycle of tales and a very supernatural mythology, as you would assume with a name like mythology, this is quite a literal, realistic tale. There is very little magic in it. It is very standard warfare. No one is bewitched by any god or anything. But the only thing that was really supernatural and enchanted in it, aside from Fergus's sword, which could again just be more of a metaphor, is the mwail, is the cow. This colossal, enormous cow that you can't even imagine the size of, that can give milk for 300 people with a single milking. But the person gave the counter argument that this is just a very classic case of like folklore and mythology and adaptation, that the mwail was very likely an entire herd of cows, and you know, an entire vast herd of cows that, and then suddenly when you think like, oh, it might be 300 cows that can give milk for 300 people, or 200 cows, however it may be, still a huge number, but suddenly when it seems like just a vast number, it seems a lot more literal. But of course, for our desires, what's more fun, the idea of 100 or 200 cows, or just one massive cow that can feed everything? A very much a, like a bovine MacGuffin for these people to come and steal and claim, as well as this captured chieftain in Flithis. And there are quite a few characters in it, so I hope this was clear. I tried to repeat who was who as much as possible to try and make it clear, mostly because there are two alleles in this tale, and both are jaded husbands as well. Both are chieftains, but not really chieftains in their own homes. We've Alil MacMata of Connacht, Queen Maeve's consort, and then we have Alil Fionn, Alil the blonde is Flithis' husband in Mayo. And on paper, depending on the version you read, I'll put a link to a couple of them in the description below. Sometimes he is described as Alil. Beg your pardon. Alil spelled like O-I-L-L-I, and O-I-L-I-L-L, as opposed to Alil, which is A-I-L-I-L-L. But some versions, they are just spelled the same. So giving them their surnames as well helped a little bit with clarity, I hope. But you've obviously got Queen Maeve and Fergus, Flithis, the two Alils. You've got Brychna, the poet as well, who sows these seeds of dissent. Apparently Brychna in some versions and in other tales is more of a fool, more of a jester who nobody respects. But here he is more of a mastermind in a higher position, but still a dastardly figure who doesn't really have anyone's good intentions, has gone mad on the power of the poet, has gone mad on the power of satire that he wields, because he is not a physically intimidating man. He does not fight single combat. He doesn't fight in war. He comes along with a clever word and a manipulative saying in someone's ear. Although Flithis very much has agency of her own tale. You know, I mean, Brychna wants to sow the seeds of defeat, but it is Flithis who insists that Brychna tell Fergus of her desires. I mean, Brychna even tells Flithis, you know, your husband's pretty great as well. And she's like, I don't care, until it is all too late. And it is interesting, yeah, this tale is not described as a tragedy because there is so much agency in it. Because no one was enchanted or bewitched, everyone was acting of their own accord. Everyone was screwing everyone else over, and it didn't matter how many people died. And so it really is a case of like them all deserving each other. But it's a classic case, like these characters don't need to be sympathetic, they don't need to be likable, they just need to be interesting. And you cannot say that any of these, I certainly don't think any of these characters are not interesting. And it's just, it's pleasant to be in this world of such visceral blood and sex, that is a story that is between 1500 and 2000 years old, for it to still have that visceral resonance and to be that interesting to adapt and to write and to read, and I certainly hope to listen to, is very exciting and is really, really cool. And I hope you all agree, because this was, again, with a lot of stuff that's been going on with me, there's like, this was a really exciting tale to adapt. There's a real one that really brings me back and really makes me see like why I love doing this and why I love telling these and why I love finding these tales, because this isn't a tale I found until about 6 months ago, because it exists in this sub realm around this, in the orbit of the cattle raid of Cooley. But this is one of those tales, and I've enjoyed every one of them, every one of these Ravescala, but this was the one that lured me back in and made me want to make a kind of sub cycle out of all of them. Also, yeah, this episode is coming about a little bit late as well, as one of the side effects of singing so much. Like on Monday nights now, I do two gigs, one in Devitt's on Camden Street and one in the Temple Bar, and so between the two of them, I'm singing for 6 hours a night. So my voice is taking a bit of getting used to, which is frustrating because I'm losing it quite a bit, which is frustrating when it is my entire livelihood and the things that I do. So yesterday and the day before, I couldn't really speak at all. You can still, I'm sure, hear the hoarseness in my voice, but there was at least some resonance there today that I felt I could record the podcast. So glad to have done it now. But I will wrap things up now. I hope you enjoyed the tale. Let me know, as always, what you think. Next week, we're going to have another folk tale, another Irish folk tale from the Fairy and Folk Tales of Ireland. And the week after that, we will have another world tale from another story from various mythology. I hope you enjoyed our tale of Baba Yaga, the Wild Witch of Slavic folklore, a couple of weeks ago. We'll see where we'll take it in 2 weeks from now. But again, all the usual ways you can support the podcast: follow me on Instagram at FiresideBard, email me at thefiresidebard@gmail.com, buy my book, Garden Sea, a Neomyth of Home, from headstuff.org or from Amazon on Kindle, support the podcast on Headstuff Plus at headstuffpodcast.com. I will see you all, you'll hear me all next time, and remember, wherever you are and wherever you go, you can always join me by the fireside.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.